podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used Android smartphones. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy S3 and other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com. Welcome to episode 100 of All About Android, recorded on Tuesday, March 12th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. And we've got a pretty awesome show today. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Gina Trapani.
And yeah.
Welcome to episode 100, baby.
I know. Does it feel like 100, Gina? Do you feel like, man, you've weathered the storm this long? Let's go another 100.
Doesn't feel like any more than 10 to me.
Maybe 9, so we're around 10. Wow, yeah, it feels like just a couple more than that for me. But still, 100's awesome. Actually, if you count, we had, Eileen and I had some like beta episodes that you can find on YouTube, I think. And then Ron came in shortly after we started those. So we're probably somewhere around like 108. So maybe, you know,
nice.
Just a couple more.
But, it's been over 2 years, right?
So yeah,
one show
that.
A week, 100. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty great. And this kind of started off, the show started off as kind of Eileen's kind of pet project on the side.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was Eileen and I kind of came up with the idea for the show together. We knew that we wanted to do some sort of an Android show. I was doing an Android show at CNET called Android Atlas Weekly. And and Eileen, you know, had her time at Revision 3 working on some of the shows there, and it just kind of made sense. So yeah, it just kind of came organic, and we've had a great time. It's been an awesome run so far. So
I love that too. That Android 2 years ago sort of inspired you guys to start a show about Android, because Android 2 years ago was very far away from where it is now. And in fact, we're going to talk about that a little bit right now.
Absolutely. But first, let's welcome our guests. That's right, plural. First off, Kevin Purdy, life hacker, author of the Complete Android Guide, just doing all sorts of stuff. Kevin, what you up to these days?
Playing with Pebbles, testing out Androids, and eventually updating the Complete Android Guide.
Excellent. Well, we are super stoked to invite you back onto the show once again, and especially for the 100th episode. Just by the way, Ron can't be with us right now. He might be able to hop in and join a little bit later, but he's traveling. He got stuck in kind of a travel meeting of sorts that was pretty much impossible for him to get out of. If he can manage it, we're going to suddenly see him jump into the dock, the Google Doc that we run the show from, and we'll bring him in so he can say hi and, you know, maybe go rah-rah a little bit. But we will see what we get there. And then also, we're super stoked to invite onto the show Andy Anatko, technology journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times, also writing on TechHive, which is kind of one of the big reasons why you're here today, is a little thing you did on TechHive last week, right?
My review of the Comixology Marvel number one piece got a lot of traction. I'm very, very pleased to finally got a lot of upvotes, as it were. So I'm not surprised you had me on.
Makes perfect sense to me. That's exactly why. Andy, obviously, you also do the show here on Twit, MacBreak Weekly. And, you know, just kind of in general, you've followed a lot of the happenings with Apple and everything. And recently did a piece on TechHive about kind of transitioning from iOS, from iPhone anyways, to the Android side of things. So Andy, we're super stoked to kind of talk to you about that and just kind of get your viewpoint on some of these things, because this is a topic that comes up on the show a lot.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, let's first of all just kind of take a look at some of the things we're going to be discussing otherwise. The impending battle of the HTC One versus the Samsung Galaxy S4, which is kind of coming up this month. A little bit later this week, actually, we're going to get a cool announcement from Samsung. Google I.O., registrations, all that kind of stuff. And of course, I mentioned the switch from iOS to Android and so much more. But let's not waste any more time. Let's get right into kind of talking with you, Andy, about kind of your transition. You posted a three-piece article on TechHive.com kind of illustrating the reasons why you kind of jumped from iPhone after how long now? Have you been with the iPhone since the beginning?
Since the very beginning, as if you count like the day that Steve Jobs announced it, actually before the beginning, because I was lucky enough to actually get my hands on one that day and got to spend like 45 minutes just playing around with it. So I go way back with it.
Cool. It's a very, very detailed piece, and I found it fascinating to read just because it encompasses pretty much all the, I mean, reading through the piece, I'm like, yeah, that's why I love Android. That right there. I love that about Android. What was your motivation for buying an S3 last year? Did it kind of spur from doing a review of the product and then you just found you didn't want to let go of it? Or how did that kind of come about?
Well, I have that unusual advantage of being a tech columnist in that companies keep sending me stuff to try out. And sometimes I have to send it back in a couple weeks. Sometimes I have to send it back in several months. Sometimes I get to keep it. Samsung sent me I attended the U.S. launch event. I spent about 2 or 3 weeks, as usual, playing around with it just from a point of view of let me forget all about what I expect out of an iPhone and let's clear my memory of that and then start fresh from there. Filed my review, kept using it for a couple of weeks. But then after I kind of put it back in its box, I realized that there's a lot about the S3 that I really, really liked and that I missed when I was going back to my iPhone 4S. And as I sometimes do, I decided, well, let's go back for another real deep soak experience with Android, because I'm certainly experienced enough with Android to keep writing reviews of it and keep on top of the news. But there's a difference between that and carrying one around with you day in and day out, and every time you find a problem, trying to solve it, as opposed to just sticking it through or just saying, okay, well, that's a problem with this platform. And really, by the time I'd been had in my pocket alongside my iPhone for 3 or 4 months, I kind of realized that after so many months of having an opportunity to have stick my hand in my pocket and take either device out of my pocket to use it, I wound up using the Android phone a lot more than the iPhone. And then when I finally reprovisioned my SIM, again with the idea that maybe I could switch them between the two as I wanted to, again, that SIM tended to stay inside the Galaxy S3. And so at that point, I had to really, you know, face the facts that, you know, I am a big Apple fan, like a lot of Android users. I've been using Apple products since I was in like junior high, since I was like in fifth, sixth, seventh grade. But sometimes you do have to reevaluate what you need a phone to do and decide what does that job better for you. And so my big fear when I was writing, so I thought it would be a really interesting thing to write about, even if, as I was making it really, really clear, the only message about this series, as long as it is that this is the story of one guy who switched phones. And also, more really, it's a focus on how far Android has come, both in the operating system, the software library, and the hardware since 1.5, 1.6. It's not at all about any failure on Apple's part. We all should be thrilled. There's so many great platforms to choose from now.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. Because definitely reading through your piece, there's a lot in there that kind of have been with the platform for a very long time. And I mean, they've been kind of key differentiators, or at least just key points that fans of the Android platform have always, you know, touted as kind of strengths of the platform. But I think you're exactly right. It's kind of the design language, the switch, you know, from ice cream sandwich going forward, they really kind of got a lot of consistency to back up those awesome features, and that was sorely needed. I mean, as you were saying, Gina, in kind of the intro, 2 years ago we started the show, and there were a lot of those cool things that we were talking about then, but it was very easy to point out a lot of the flaws and the failures on the platform as well, because it just wasn't a very consistent experience.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, Android was a hot mess for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that I loved about it was its potential more than its actual manifestation. And I think that this is kind of one of the things that Apple fans kind of accused Android fans of being. It's like, it's always going to be the next release that nails that thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like Android, and we've talked about this on the show, Android has reached a place now where it's and this is what I really liked about your piece, Andy, is that you said this: we have to evolve this conversation beyond which is better, iOS or Android, and just acknowledge that we have these two platforms. Let's talk about these two platforms. And, you know, you said that this was a story about like some, you know, one dude, you know, switches mobile operating systems. But you know, you've talked about sort of the tribalism amongst sort of iOS users and Android users. And I know that you're an intelligent thinking human being and that you don't play into that.
But in a way, you've
been a leader in kind of the iOS tribe for a long time. So I think that when you switch to Android, it's a much bigger deal than even a big sort of, you know, even a blogger. What do you think that we have to do, like, as tech commentators to go past this sort of weird tribalism, my team, your team, which is better, and sort of make it a more of a conversation about what do you need in a phone? Because, you know, not which multi-billion dollar company is going to make more money or is making a better product, but what does the consumer want and need from the phone?
I think it takes a lot of effort to make sure that you're looking at this device in an abstract way. You are reviewing the iPhone 5. You are reviewing the Galaxy S3. You are reviewing the HTC One. But at some point, you have to take a half a step backward and try to see the broader perspective of it, where you can appreciate that the way that Apple locks down iOS and locks down the iPhone makes a lot of things very, very inconvenient. As a matter of fact, it was one of the two major things that really got me to switch to Android. But on the other hand, it also makes this thing a lot more reliable. The experience is much cleaner. They allow a lot more beauty and consistency among even third-party apps. And then when you look at Android, it's possible for an iOS user to say, oh man, it's just that the out-of-the-box experience isn't nearly as nice as iOS. It's harder to use, and there are all these configurations that just don't make any sense to me, and it's just very complicated. But then you sort of have to coast past that over the next couple of weeks, and you appreciate that it's like a new pair of leather boots, where they're uncomfortable at first, but as you adapt this device to your needs, the ability to drill down into settings and just keep tweaking things, not in a complex way, not by rooting it, by simply saying, gee, I really don't like what happens when I plug in a set of headphones. Is there a way to change that behavior? Oh, yes, as a matter of fact, there is. I just keep tapping into settings till I find that setting. So then you appreciate that, yes, it is more difficult to use at the outset, but on the other hand, it becomes easier. It becomes more of a customized experience. So this is the sort of thing where if an Android user picks up an iPhone, it's going to frustrate them that they can't change it. They can't modify how many steps it takes to turn Bluetooth on and off. If an iPhone user tries out an Android device, it's going to annoy them that it isn't as pretty, that a lot of things don't work quite as well. Mm-hmm. And that's why it really does take a couple of weeks to take that half step back and realize, well, is there a point to the decision that they made? That's actually something that I'm always asking myself whenever I'm reviewing a product, where is there a philosophy that's being articulated through these features and through this product? And if I understand the philosophy, will that help me to understand who this is geared towards?
Mm-hmm. Now, you have been using, as we mentioned, the Samsung Galaxy S3. Had you played much with the Nexus devices, and was there ever kind of a pull in that direction? Or I understand this completely. Samsung does a lot to kind of make their devices do even more than straight up, you know, Nexus device running stock Android OS out of the box. Does the Nexus beckon you at all?
Absolutely. The Nexus 4 was a disappointment, I felt. I didn't like the battery life. It's just there's a lot about it that doesn't make it seem like a prestige product. It doesn't really seem like a flagship phone. I think that Google was trying to hit some price points there, and then the product suffered as a result of it. I can't say that the Galaxy S3 was definitively my definition of a perfect phone. I liked the larger – I think the screen is almost spot on the right size for a modern phone screen, or at least for me. It's large enough to give me all that breathing room I really like when I'm reading content and watching movies and stuff like that, while still being reasonably small and pocketable. I mean, the Note mm-hmm. 2 is kind of a big leap up. It's not ridiculous, or at least doesn't seem as ridiculous to me now as it did when I first saw it a year and a half ago. The reason I'm really hoping that the next generation of Nexus devices is going to be a little bit more appealing to me, chiefly because still the biggest problem that the Android community has is this horrible OS fragmentation problem. It is absolutely ridiculous that it takes so long for the people who bought a flagship device advertised on every bus station and every subway billboard all across the city all summer long, and it has to be a full version behind the latest version of Android. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely silly that when there's a bug that affects battery life or a bug that affects GPS, it's not it has the bug fix has to go through several layers. It has to go, Google has to fix it, and then Samsung has to take those changes and roll it into their build, and then AT&T has to decide to roll that out from Samsung to its current subscribers. And that's one of the things that's sort of categorically an inferior experience to iOS, because again, with Apple maintaining so much control over the hardware and the OS and the infrastructure, all they have to do is roll out one fix, and whether it's a huge 6.0 to 7.0 update or a simple 6.01 to 6.02 update, every phone that can reasonably run this operating system gets it on the exact same day, and they usually don't have to wait that long to get it if it's an important bug fix.
And is that something that the average everyday user misses, cares about, or I guess should it be?
They will. I mean, this is something that I try to make clear, that you have to get that kind of experience on Android. You do have to buy the Nexus brand, and they don't necessarily care about going from 4.1 to 4.2, especially because Google will simply release a new version of the Google Search product or the Google Maps product, and it'll give you a lot of the stuff that you were hoping to get, like with a major OS mm-hmm. update. But then you read about people who are having, again, problems with battery life, problems with GPS suddenly disappearing and requiring a restart, or sure. even some fussing around with app caches to fix it. And they don't want this to be part of their life. They don't want to have to figure out how to turn GPS back on a couple of times a week. And when you tell them that if this is a problem with an Apple product, it really becomes an all-hands-on-deck prestige problem that Apple feels as though they have to solve immediately. And you won't have to wait more than 2 hours to get it on your device once Apple releases it. And now it's we have to tell someone with a Verizon Samsung Galaxy S3 that, okay, well, first, Verizon and Samsung have to argue about whose fault it is. And then if Samsung loses that argument, then Samsung and Google have to argue about whose fault it is. And then if Google loses that argument, then Google has to create a patch, and then it has to trickle all the way down to you. And I'm sure by the time your contract is up, you will get a fix so that your GPS stays on when you tell it to.
Hopefully.
It's a hard sell.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. That makes a perfect amount of nonsense, actually, let's just say.
I really enjoy the difference in perspective, because after you've used the iPhone for X number of years, you stop expecting that you can customize it. You stop expecting sure. that you should be able to have one application send a piece of information into another application, because that's just the smell of the air that you've been breathing for the past 2 or 3 years. I think similarly, if you live in Android for X number of years, you know, you don't notice that funny smell in your city's air either until you leave it and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, it's not as bad as the air above Beijing. Or anything like that. But, you know, you experience that. We go into someone else's house and it doesn't smell bad, but it smells different. And yeah. you can't get your host to realize that, you know, there is something kind of different about the air in your house. I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah.
I will still stay for dinner.
The air above Shenzhen, maybe, if not Beijing.
Yeah. Well, I live in Petaluma and there's a lot of cows here. So. In the summertime, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
See, but that's an artisan smell. That's
true. I do think that that's a really good point. I don't think that someone can really review a device or an operating system unless they live with it for a long time. And I feel like there's just myopia yeah. when people who have an iPhone as their personal phone review Android phones and the other way around. I spent all 2012 using iOS exclusively and then switched back to Android after years of Android use and switched back to Android in the beginning of this year and felt really kind of out of whack. Like, it really is a different thing. It's a totally different environment. You do have to just kind of get used to it's like, oh right, this is how it works here, and that's mm-hmm. how and now I see all the, but I mean Apple and Google just have such different philosophies, and they manifest themselves in the operating systems differently, so you really can't I think do commentary unless you live with it. Right. So Andy, you switched to an Android phone as your phone, the Galaxy S3, but you said in your piece that the tablet was a completely different story, that you are
right.
full on iPad, that Android has not made it on a tablet yet, and you're sticking with your iPad. I know you're a big iPad user. You do a lot of writing on the iPad. You have a keyboard and all that. Can you talk a little bit about did you try Android on a tablet? Which tablets did you try? How'd it go?
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Asus Transformer Prime. I think that's a wonderful flavor of hardware because I am a real heavy user of my tablet. where I have a little, like, you know, I have a little bag that always contains like my 10-inch iPad plus a Bluetooth keyboard, and to have this really cool sort of system where the tablet portion clicks very solidly into a conventional laptop sort of format. Not only that, but the laptop section contains a supplemental battery that gives you 18 hours of battery life. This is a feature that I have an interest in. I see the appeal of having a really powerful computer with 18-hour battery life. But when you start to look at, well, let's take a look at what kind of apps I can get that let me really take advantage of having this this 9.8-inch, 10-inch screen. And man, it's just nothing but a pageant of disappointment and tears, where there's so few apps out there that seem to be geared towards a tablet experience. Whereas I don't have quite so many demands that I make of a phone. I do want to use my tablet pretty much the way that I use a notebook. I mean, it is true that the iPad passed its biggest test earlier last year, when I'm going to be spending a week in Ireland. And I'm not going to take any laptop with me. I'm not taking my MacBook. I'm just going to rely on my iPad. And it was perfectly fine. It was beautiful for what I wanted to do. And part of that reason is that there really are desktop grade apps for the iPad. They are, to be sure, they're usually apps that have been nicely rearticulated for multi-touch, as opposed to just simply cutting and pasting Microsoft Office into a smaller screen. But it really does. You won't miss much by making that transition. If there is a similar experience you can create for an Android tablet, I simply haven't found it. And every time I get a 10-inch tablet, Android tablet, which isn't as frequent as when I get an Android phone, but I do try really hard to reevaluate this every 3 or 4 months. I'm just not seeing how I would ever tell somebody, yes, I think you should. I think for your needs, you would be better suited to get an Android tablet than an iPad, because the price. You're not really saving that much money. The hit that you're taking in infrastructure and apps is, I think, severe. And I just don't think it's quite there yet. Smaller tablets are another story, because you're talking about a class of apps that are still sort of straddling the line between, should we make this into an upgraded phone experience or a downgraded tablet experience? Mm-hmm. That was my complaint with the iPad mini, where I was very surprised to find that Apple was just going to scale down the full-sized iPad interface, because now the buttons are a little bit too small. Some of the text is too small to read. Not bad, but not perfect. If you compare this to the Nexus 7, you have an experience where, okay, I wish that it were more aggressively a big tablet experience, but this isn't bad. Again, not perfect, but not bad either. So there's sort of a give and take there. But yeah, I mean, I wish I could say that I see any optimism and any success in Android tablets, the full-size tablets, but I just don't see them.
Yeah, hey, things have gotten better, but yes, you're right. There's a lot of room for improvement. Kevin, what were you going to say?
So in your... More often you're writing an article in which you're, you know, kind of speaking to a wider audience. You're not just telling a personal story about your switch from iPhone to Android, Andy. When you have, you know, another Android phone that comes along that you really like, how do you weigh your own personal tendency toward, you know, checking settings, switching out keyboards, and really enjoying the freedom of Android versus what you think the quote, heavy air quotes, average user is going to want or need?
I have to say that my inspiration in being a tech journalist is Roger Ebert. I mean, early on, when the first time I got a column, like now a couple of decades ago, the goal I set for myself is that if I could be for tech writing what Roger is for movie writing, I could count myself as a very, very fortunate and very, very successful person. I certainly haven't gotten there yet, but that's the goal I aim for. And what Roger does with his reviews is that he doesn't pretend that he's someone who has never seen a movie before. He brings into that screening room the brain that he brought into the parking lot. But he will explain to you why he feels the way he does about a certain movie. He won't simply dismiss a gross out comedy because it has a very low level of comedy. He'll dismiss it because he thinks it's a poorly made gross out comedy, and that movies like, okay, maybe gross out's the wrong word, but a movie like Anchorman or Dumb and Dumber are hysterically funny movies, and they do that sort of thing extremely well. They just don't like the ones that just do a very hackneyed approach to it. So I can't pretend to be someone who has never used a phone before. I can't pretend to be a typical consumer, but I try to use that as an asset. I don't think that the people who are reading my column and reading my reviews want me to be inexperienced and have a very limited perspective. They want to get the benefit of someone who tries these things a lot. And when I say something like, I don't like the fact that Android is too difficult to use in the first couple of weeks. I don't like the fact that it's hard to get system up, that the system updates don't come directly from Google. When I complain about from Apple that, okay, when I complain about the iPhone 5 and say that, okay, it's beautiful, it's lovely, it's very, very thin. It's the thinnest device. It's almost miraculously thin and light. But where did you make the camera any better? Where did I get a practical benefit from this? If you explain the reasons why you believe what you believe, it gives your readers the ability to decide which positives and negatives are relevant to them. And it will also help give them some context about why you believe the way you believe. So it's the problem that I often have with reviews when I read reviews I don't like that are written by other people. It's that there's this real sense of arrogance that, well, of course Apple flubbed it with this one because they just don't know how to make a laptop that provides good value. It's like, well, no, they do. I mean, it's the MacBook Air 11 inch is a $1,000 notebook that is the that you get every penny's worth of $1,000. What it isn't is cheap. And then you talk about the $249 Chromebook, and you explain that this is – no, it doesn't have a million different things. No, it's not made out of, you know, mills from a single block of old-growth aluminum abraded away by Benedictine nuns with pencil erasers. It is actually molded out of plastic, but plastic is a fine material, and it's nice if you don't have $1,000 to spend on a notebook that Google and Samsung have given you an alternative. So like I said, it's really about making sure that you – apply the you share everything that you're thinking and you apply the context of your decisions. And I think that at that point, people will either get it or they won't get it.
And final question, I think everyone is wondering, what ROM have you installed on your rooted Samsung Galaxy S3? I doubt you're rooting, right?
I've been on the Cyanogen forums. I like what I see. For now, I feel as though I have to keep it pure stock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only because I don't see there is some flexibility and freedom on the iPhone platform. A lot of people who weren't being who are iPhone fans and who they weren't being argumentative when they commented on my series of saying, well, you know, if you want to root your iPhone and jailbreak it, there's a whole bunch of apps on Cydia that will let you make the changes that you want. And that certainly should be acknowledged, but that's a different thing entirely.
Sure.
When you get it out of the box, you really have to. You really have to write and experience the device as the company intended you to experience it. And if they intended for you to change things around, then they intended you to change things around. Rooting it is a different thing entirely. And I'm not really quite ready to start doing that yet. I want to develop a sense of arrogance about Android before I can say, yes, and here are the problems with how they're doing the power management system. As you can see, they're holding when they have a multi-core CPU, they don't understand that the graphics redraws only has. It's like, no.
My phone deserves to be more insecure.
I'm really disappointed that they went for the 7220 GPU instead of the 720/24. Yeah. And that was another thing too. I mean, I'm not only a commentator, I'm also a user, yeah. And I'm very, very aware of the fact that as much gaff as Android gets for having so much malware available for it, then the next sentence has to be, yeah, but if you don't download pirated software, exactly, you will miss 95.5% of it. There's a reason why you kind of want to stick with the Google Play Store. So as a user, I really don't want to have to worry about that. And that's why I pretty much stick to stock Android running accessing Google Play Store.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Andy, this has been great kind of talking with you about this and getting this perspective, because as I said, it comes up on the show pretty frequently. And I don't know why the need is there, possibly because, you know, people like to form their alliance and we try not to necessarily do that on the show. But it's still good to see the other side. I myself have always been on Android. I've never
owned or spent more than maybe a handful of minutes, you know, a couple of times with an iOS device. Someday I would be interested in having an iOS device and spending at least a couple of weeks with one just to kind of see so that I have more of a shaped knowledge about what, you know, what it's like in iOS and what the good things are in iOS.
And I'm really pleased with I wouldn't have agreed to come on if I had, you know, not know you guys and didn't know like exactly how well you handle your show. I've been getting a lot of interview requests, and I can always see the he's setting up for an Apple is doomed. Apple is totally no longer innovating, and if Apple's getting its lunch handed to them by Samsung now, I don't think I want to be a part of that. If you want to link to the article, fine, link to it, but I'm not going to. I don't want to be quoted out of context. But I mean, to me, the most important part of it was the last section of the part three of it, in which, I mean, as Gina was saying before, I think it's very important that we stop talking about Android versus iOS and we start talking about Android and iOS. I'm so pleased that we have two such strong, competent companies producing mobile operating systems and hardware with two such different points of view. And also, let's not ignore what Microsoft is doing with Windows Phone. Let's not ignore what BlackBerry is doing with BlackBerry 10. Well, both. I don't think either of these devices are great for mainstream users. They're certainly not great for me yet. But each one of them has some great ideas in it, which I would love to have on whatever phone I've got in my pocket.
Sure.
That's where I draw the line, though. I can't care about BlackBerry. Forget that.
I knew if I kept talking, someone would call me a heretic. Yes.
And that right there is why we brought you on the show, Andy.
At that point in the piece, I was like, he's right.
I want to systematically get myself ostracized from every phone community until I have no option but to run Ubuntu on phones now.
Now you're going to have to create your own phone, your own OS.
Exactly.
Piece of cake, right? Well, Andy Anako, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you just go ahead and plug whatever you have going on, where you want to point people to?
If you can spell my last name, try going to I'm Anako on Twitter, which is where I post several times a day. I have a blog that I direct things that have nothing to do with technology. If you go to anako.com, you'll see those things that have nothing to do with technology, but also links to my Sun-Times column, my podcasts. I also have a podcast on the 5x5 network, the Anako Almanac, which is usually non-tech related, but has some interesting stuff on it. And you'll see links to all kinds of other things there.
Radical. Thank you again, Andy. Really appreciate having you on the show today.
Thanks Andy.
All right.
Thank you.
Cool. All right. Take care, Andy. We've got some news to get to, so let's get right to it.
Tomorrow is the day. The Mad Rush starts at 7 a.m. Pacific time. Google I/O registration opens up tomorrow, 7 a.m. It will most likely be closed by 7:15. I mean, well, I don't know. I'm making predictions. Last year, it sold out in 20 minutes. So we'll see how quickly it sells out this year. If you want to get to I/O, you'll need a Google Wallet account, a Google Plus profile. Set those up before you try to register. General attendees can bypass. It's $900. Student and faculty can get in for $300. And the registration will be open on the brand new Google I/O 2013 website, which is developers.google.com/events/io/register, which is available right now and has kind of a fun little game on it. Let's see. I'm actually looking at the site. If you click on the I/O logo there, there's a big I/O block, and if you click on the I's and the I and the O in certain configurations, you can level up, you can move through levels and see
and it gives you your progress down at the bottom
screen. Yeah, exactly. So Chad's doing it for us right now. That's what those weird sounds are.
Pass the level. There we
yes,
go.
The ASCII one. I love the ASCII one. Sweet. So actually, I mean, not to spoil it, you should certainly click around on the IOs yourself.
Yeah.
But there is a post on Google Plus which lists all the different levels and all the different configurations of I's and O's that you have to tap in order to check out all the levels. I believe that there's even a game of Pong in there, which is kind of fun. So we'll actually, Jason, you and I will be at Google I/O. Kevin, I think you'll be there as well.
I will be.
Is it too early to announce that? I hope it wasn't.
I don't know. I haven't known, but yes, we're going to be there.
I hope it's already tomorrow in Malaysia. We're good.
It's already tomorrow in Malaysia.
All right, cool. That works. Yeah, it was remarkably easy this time around. I don't know why, but...
Yes, their press invitations are very efficient this year.
I guess so. Hey, I'm not complaining at all. But yeah, absolutely. Super stoked for Google I.O. And hope to see you there. If you see us walking around, you know, say hi. I love being able to talk to people that I run into there. So let's see here. So we... definitely have to cruise through some of these to make it through the whole show here. So let's talk real quick about Google Music Service. Billboard reported, and this was a little bit before even last show, but it kind of expanded after last week's show ended, reported that Google struck a deal with Warner Music Group, giving Google rights to two services it was working on, one that's part of Google's Android platform and then one that's part of YouTube. So obviously the one that's part of Google Play is kind of more interesting to me, although it's interesting that they would have two services and one of those folded into YouTube. But the Android Music service, I mean, you know, being a big part of mobile, to have something to kind of compete with Spotify, Pandora, man, I would love to have something like that. But there's not a whole lot more there to talk about, but other than the fact that there's hope, and hopefully sometime this year, who knows, maybe it would be a topic that they bring up at I.O. about expansion of the music project, about, you know, within Play Music, and maybe we'll find out more about that at I.O. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll happen in time.
No music services figured out how to charge users more than they pay for music, but everyone keeps jumping in. Like, everyone keeps jumping in the pool and figuring out that they'll be the last one out.
Right. So we'll see. I would love to see that, and then have all my services in one place. That'd be great. Cool little patent, but I feel like this is a familiar patent to me, but maybe not on the Google side.
Oh, really? Yeah. A quick bit of news about this. I generally don't like patent news, but this just caught my eye. Fandroid reports that Google filed a patent for backside touch controls. And there's a diagram here on the article, which I have studied at length.
I know.
I've studied for a longer amount of time than I really would like to admit. And I'm not exactly sure what this means. Okay. What I gather is that they filed a patent for gestures and touch gestures on the back of your device. Okay, so if you're touching the screen on the front of your device and you do something, you perform an action, that you apparently will be able to press or gesture on the back of your device to also trigger an action. So basically make the back of your device the same as your touchscreen. I have no idea what this would be like. This sounds just weird to me. I don't know how it'll work. I imagine that the targets will have to be really large and the gestures will have to be pretty general in order for it to be useful at all, because it's the back of your phone and you can't obviously see it and there's no display on the back of your phone. But interesting, nevertheless.
Yeah, almost like a mouse touchpad or something, just...
Yeah,
you need to rotate
apparently...
a cube on the screen, and like you could flip it between the two thumbs.
It will only rotate if you're doing it just the right part on both
just
sides.
Just the right way.
That's weird.
Rubik's Cube app. That's, by the way, that's the way. That's what it's for. Rubik's Cube.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a no-brainer right there. Obviously, that's a key.
It is Google
feature. Yeah.
Totally. A couple people in the chat room are saying it looks like the PS Vita.
Yeah. The PS Vita already has this actually on it, but that the PS Vita is obviously a game thing, so you can use it to swipe between pages. It's not really for actual like hitting icons. You do the first screen for that. Mm-hmm. But if because you know you're holding it, you can swipe between things like that.
Hmm. Right. It seems like like a navigation, just a swipe page or to focus in to preview something. I guess there's a pressure point. There might be pressure sensitivity as well. Yeah. Anyway, we might be touching the back of our phones in the future. That was why.
It's more of like the scroll ball that used to be on the front of a few phones, where it would sort of allow you to select over stuff, but it really wasn't a replacement.
I guess if that
screen.
Were the case, I mean, you know, you could just have solid control over your device and still be scrolling. It's still weird. Is it weird just because it's not something we're used to? Probably. I don't know. I withhold judgment on this one. But early report is, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Let's take a quick break and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Gazelle. We are super stoked to have Gazelle back on the show. And, I mean, it's perfect timing. Actually, if you're, you know, thinking about getting into an Android, into the Android world with a device, you already have one and a new one's coming out. We've got the Galaxy S4, the HTC One. I mean, there are just a ton of phones being announced and releasing within even the next month. So it's a great time. Before you get a new one,
Or if you've already upgraded, you can make sure and sell your used phone on Gazelle for cash. And basically, you know, this allows you to actually get money for these devices that might just be sitting in a drawer somewhere, not being used, and losing money every day that it sits in that drawer. The earlier you sell it, the more money you get. Gazelle's a way to do that. GAZELLE.com. You tell Gazelle the condition of your device. You select it's a super easy kind of method of, you know, saying this is my device, this is the carrier that it's on, this is the storage, answer a few questions that Gazelle poses for you, and then they'll present you with a price that they will buy your device for. They'll ship you a box, pay for shipping. You get the box in the mail. When you're ready to send it off, you have a 30-day guarantee. So even if you're not ready to depart with your device on this very day, you can lock in that price. And then when you're ready to get rid of it, maybe you get your S4 in the mail, and it's within that 30 days, you drop your device that you sold into the box, send it back to them. They evaluate the condition, and if it all checks out, which you probably will, just be honest when you fill out the form, you get the amount that they promised to you. So it's GAZELLE. As I said, those offers are good for 30 days, and it's just a really great, easy service for getting some money for gadgets that you probably have lying around. Gazelle's paid $50 million to over 500,000 customers, and it's just a really easy, quick, simple process. You can find the Galaxy S2 in there, the S3, HTC One X, Droid Razr, iPhone 4S. They have all of the kind of big name devices right now. So you might as well go check it out and see what you can get for your device. So what is your Android smartphone worth? Take a minute, go to gazelle.com, and you can find out for yourself. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy device today or whatever you have. Go to the site and check it out at gazelle.com. We thank them so much for their support of All About Android and the Twit Network. Gazelle, you guys are awesome. All right, let's jump into hardware. Speaking of hardware,
Samsung Galaxy S4 will be announced in 2 days in New York on March 14th, and Samsung's PR machine is in full force. Samsung gave its first official glimpse of the S4. It's basically a corner.
Pretty much.
A black device. They tweeted that out at Samsung Mobile US. And poor Jeremy. Samsung issued part two of their teaser video that involved, we talked about this last week, little kid named Jeremy talking to the Samsung people, gets a box, looks in the box, it glows. I feel bad for this kid only because so many tech commentators have made fun of him at this point. But clearly this kid is going to kind of run into the auditorium with this box. Let's see. We've got a couple of leaked screenshots talking about the features that we talked about last week. The smart scroll, which is when your eyes get down to the bottom of the page, that the phone will automatically scroll for you. Looks like you'll be able to configure that on a per app basis, and maybe, perhaps most importantly, turn it off.
Definitely settings for that.
That other feature though, the smart pause, we weren't really sure what that was. It turns out it sounds like that is going to be, if you're watching a video and you turn your face away, that the video will pause automatically. That actually sounds more interesting to me than the smart scroll. And it looks like also the battery in the S4 will have NFC built into it to, I guess, make the phone a little slimmer. And a few leaked images. I mean, this is going to happen in a couple days. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about smart scroll and smart pause and the sexy curve of the top left corner of the device?
Kevin, go for it. What do you think?
The more useful smart pause would be when someone else looks at your screen, it pauses whatever video is playing so that you don't look so immature, obviously. But I think the next story that you're about to read is going to relate to that, I think, which is about the huge battery that they're putting into it, a 2600 milliamp battery. I feel like you need that if you have a device that's constantly watching video style your eyes and your fingers to see what you want to do next.
Right. Yeah, I have to imagine that's a pretty taxing kind of process to always be looking through the camera to see that kind of thing, to know, oh, well, yeah, he just looked away.
I mean, just to keep an optical feed open all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And 2600 is great. It's not the Note 2's, I think, what is it, 31 or 3200, but it's more than the S3's I want to say 22, somewhere around there. So they kind of like split it in the middle and gave it, you know, I guess the jury will still be out as far as if that actually gives you a noticeable bump or, like you say, all that processing just kind of gobbles up all that battery.
Do you have to register the Note 2 as a hybrid car? That's a 32. Wow. Yeah. That's a lot of battery.
It is a lot of battery.
A lot of battery. It's a lot of. I hadn't really thought about the relationship of the battery to the smart new smart features. I imagine those smart features are turned off by default, or perhaps turned on for only particular apps like news readers. And but it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the effect on the battery is. I also hadn't really been thinking about it from the perspective of my phone is constantly watching my face, but that's exactly what it's doing.
That's what it has to do, yeah. And I feel like there's something along these lines in the S3 as well. So this isn't the first time that they're kind of going down this road. I can't remember what it was, but as far as like a feature that I would use, I just don't know if I would use these things. Having said that, Samsung's been very successful at differentiating their device from others by adding in features like this. So it's kind of what they do. It's kind of how they do it. So,
like Andy said at the top of the show, you know, they fill in a lot of the gaps that you might encounter otherwise with a brand new Android device.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then, hey, wait a minute. Do we have some breaking news?
Yeah, I think we do.
I think we have breaking news. Holy cow. This just in, that guy, right?
Hey, it's Ron.
Hey. Hello, Ron.
I made it.
How's it going, Ron? What's
your okay. I hope my bandwidth holds up. I'm literally in the hotel with the worst Wi-Fi ever, and so I'm actually using my hotspot. So I probably have a lag, so I'm sorry.
That's okay. You slowed down a little bit during that, but it was dramatic.
I can tell right now.
It was dramatic. It was well done.
Well, I couldn't miss the 100th episode, so I had to figure out some way to use the technology to get in on the show. So I wanted to come and virtually pat you guys on the back and give you a high five.
Well, patting you on the back as well, even though you're not sitting next to me. But next time you're in, I'll give you a belated pat on the back. But it's awesome to have you on, man.
Yeah. So I do have breaking news, though, even though my video sucks. I bought a new phone.
Oh, what'd you get?
Oh.
I buckled down and I ordered the Nexus 4.
Nice. You moved to the Nexus 4. And how are you liking it so far?
Well, I haven't got it yet. It shipped from Google yesterday. I got my shipment notification. So I bought it on Sunday and it shipped on Monday. They told me it would be 1 to 2 weeks. So we'll see how long it takes to actually get to San Francisco from Mountain View. I'm hoping to have it by Friday. Cross your fingers. So hopefully next Tuesday when I'm back in studio, I'll have the new phone and I can kind of finally give my Nexus 4 review. But I had it with my broken screen, and so I couldn't wait for the Galaxy 4. And I didn't want the Galaxy 4 anyway. I decided to go with the stock phone. So Nexus 4, here I come.
Oh, famous last
words. Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't wait just for the event, just to check out the 4 before you made your decision.
Yeah, Gina, as you'll get to know me, I tend to make impulsive decisions. And also, the stock phone is what I prefer. I don't want any Samsung stuff. Like, I just want the native what Google wants us to be using. So that's why I went with the Nexus 4. So
it makes sense. Did you get the awesome wireless charger? I want that thing so bad. The Death Star sliced in half.
I didn't, but I considered it, and I bet you I'll probably have it within a couple of weeks.
daydream. Daydream.
Yeah, we'll see. Now I'm regretting that decision. I'll probably order it tonight. So there you go. Impulsive decisions. So
I think contribute. You need to get on that. Well, that's awesome.
Great job, everybody.
Well, congratulations on the new device. I can't wait to hear about your travels with it. Just don't drop it, you know. And does the Nexus 4 have a kind of trim around the screen so that whenever you set it down, you're not just scratching the hell out of the screen.
I think so.
It
does. Okay.
Yeah. It has like a metal band that the lip is a little bit further than the glass. Tony actually has one. I don't think he's still in the.
I'm amazed at how important that is. I have the HTC One X Plus right here. I reviewed it earlier today on Before You Buy. A little late. I mean, this thing came out in November, December of last year, and the HTC One is like
a couple of weeks away. So definitely a don't buy. But it has the screen that kind of rounds at the edges down to the device. So there really is no border. And I mean, I treated this thing like a baby, and it's scratched on the front, probably because something rubbed up against it or I set it down on its face at one point. So it's amazing to me how important having that is. And some of these devices just don't have it. So that's good. But cool. Well, you know, Ron, sticking around or taking off, I don't know if you wanted to just drop in and say hi or stick around. It's entirely up to you.
I think probably I should bounce because I think already my Skype is freezing and I think I'm pushing the limits on, and I don't want to get my tethering to get turned off again. So I probably should
good point.
Gracefully bow out. But I'm sorry to crash the show, but I was stuck on the road. Jason knows how much it killed me to not be in studio this week. But I'll be back next week, and I just wanted to come and congratulate Jason and Gina and thank Kevin for being on the show and congratulate Chad and everyone on Twit for 100 episodes. And I only wish Eileen was here as well for me to give her a high five. So, you know.
Well, you don't have to apologize for anything. We're stoked that you were able to drop in even for a few minutes and say hi. So,
trust me. I'm in Baltimore right now, and it's no fun. So I would much rather be there.
Right on, Ron. Well, have fun in Baltimore. Right. Make sure and talk to a lot of people about The Wire while you're there. And yeah,
they love that.
I know, totally. That's like one of those stereotypes.
No one does that.
They're like, oh, great, so. Another Wire joke. All right, man. Take care. Right. Safe travels.
Congratulations.
Later. Woo-hoo.
Congratulations to you, Ron. Thank you.
Congratulations, Ed.
All right. And let's see here. I will take the next story here. And it looks like, okay, so we were talking a little bit about the HTC One, and it looks like shipment delays are possibly coming into play here. It was supposed to release, I believe, in some markets by the end of this week, which was going to give it kind of a little bit of a leg up on the Galaxy S4. It's obvious competitor at this point. HTC needs a win with the One. They're kind of struggling right now, and the last thing they need is a delay to launch this their new flagship, and that's what it looks like is happening, probably by the end of the month, if not a little bit later, in most markets. Kind of a bad sign for HTC to have this right out of the gate, don't you guys think?
Not good. Not good with all the Samsung hype going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, some project manager lost his job.
Somebody did. Yeah, exactly. It's possible that the famed Ultra Pixel camera has something to do with it, something about component shortages. I'm not sure if that's confirmed, but regardless, not a good thing to be delayed on this, considering the time. Like, devices get delayed all the time, but the fact that this is their flagship and the S4 is kind of getting announced in a couple of days, like, any amount of time ahead of the S4 that HTC could have gotten with this device would have been very valuable to them. So I don't know. I'm really still very curious to see the One and play around with it.
Why is it still the HTC One? Why isn't it 2 yet?
Consistency? I have no idea. Because what's weird to me is that last year HTC kind of said the same thing about their One, the initial One release, is that, you know, we're scaling back. We're not going to release a million different devices. We're just going to release the HTC One, and it's going to be the unified device and everything. But they still came out with the One, the One X, the One S, and then later the One X Plus.
Really negates the meaning of the word One, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. And now they're back to the One again. So, you know, not confusing at all.
Just like Parliament Funkadelic. Always on the One.
Exactly. So so we'll see. But I wish HTC success because I really like their design. What do we know about Project Glass, Gina?
We got some more news about Project Glass down at South by Southwest in Austin this past week. Google showed off a few apps running on Glass, the New York Times, Evernote, Gmail, and Path. So we're getting more of a sense of what Glass is going to look like, right? So basically, the interface is going to be kind of like stacked cards, I think kind of similar to what Google Now looks like, but kind of transparent. There's some screenshots over at The Verge. So, for example, the New York Times app on Glass can show you breaking news when you kind of look up, when you do that look up head gesture. You can see photos and headlines. If you can use Gmail, you can actually reply to incoming messages, which, man, I can't wait to try that out. just because, holy crap, answering email from your glasses. You can subscribe to just important emails. You get notified of just important emails right there in your heads-up display. There's an Evernote app for Glass as well, so you can snap a picture with Glass and then share it to Sketch, and then later on you can add that to your Evernote, because Evernote owns Sketch. So one of the examples they gave on stage there was like, you know, if you're in a meeting and you take a picture and you share it to Sketch, you know, you could bring it up on your tablet, for example, and annotate it right there, which would be kind of neat. And one of the biggest questions that Google's been getting about Glass is, what about people who already wear glasses? And the answer is that the people who already wear glasses can get Glass. They're actually building it to be modular so that it can actually snap onto existing frames. So this isn't going to be available for the Explorer edition, which is the edition the folks who signed up at I.O., like you and me, Jason, are going to get, and Kevin, but this will be available at some point in the future. So yeah, Glass is going to happen. This is really going to happen.
They've got a big marketing push happening right now. Obviously. So it's kind of a big deal, as they say.
I think what I really like about Glass is like for developers anyway, like some of the design guidelines is that it has to be, you only show the most important information, you have to be super minimalistic, you know, it has to be timely and it has to be contextually sensitive. And I really like that. Like, I like the way with touchscreen devices, you know, it made us kind of pare down our websites and make them touch friendly and simplify and minimalize. And I feel like we're going to have kind of a similar thing, but even more to an extreme, bias heavily toward, you know, on just-in-time notifications for Glass. So I actually think that this is going to be, even if Glass isn't successful, I think it'll be interesting from a development standpoint. Totally. Of how do we filter out all the noise and just figure out what do people really care about enough to interrupt their field of vision?
Yeah,
that's a really good point about the success. I mean, as goofy as it sounds, you know, they're a public company, they sell things, but I don't really see it as like Google's going to be crushed if it doesn't become, you know, on everyone's... it doesn't become a universal accessory. It is a really just a, at this point, it's looking like just such a nice push forward into a new way of thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. Wait a minute. Do we have breaking news?
We do.
Oh my gosh. This is crazy. The show just keeps getting crazier and crazier. We have a Nexus phone. Wait a minute. What's behind that phone? Ooh, I don't understand. Peel it away. The suspense is killing me. Hello. What's up?
Okay, so I just spent the last 20 minutes arguing with Tom, like, why I can't use his basic setup and why I'm doing this instead, because, like, all this stuff here is not working. Major fail.
Oh, he's no.
Like, he's like, is the camera on? Is the black magic box on? I'm like, yes. Yes.
Oh, no.
So here's my fake mic that's not really working. Anyway, it's just hilarious. You could ask him about it tomorrow. So I'm just like, this is not working.
See, I just
your setup.
I just thought that Tom was very protective of his camera shot for TNT. And he's like, no, this is how I come on the show. I know Tom better than that.
Maybe it is. He's just like,
oh, it's hidden.
I'll show you why it doesn't work.
It's disguised.
You put on your ugly headphones.
Oh, she's apparently Margaret Cho's mom now, but
how are you doing, Eileen? It's good to see you.
How are you guys?
Awesome.
Great to see you.
Yeah. Good to see you. Happy 100th, everybody. I've been watching on and off since I left the show. Show's looking and sounding awesome, by the way. So congrats to all of you.
Thank you.
And I just got this Nexus 4 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Nice.
So it's all really new. And am I frozen?
Did the video freeze on the way back to you?
Froze to me. Oh, I'm not frozen, right?
No. You're still coming through. It's coming through okay. So how are you feeling about the Nexus 4? So Ron just got one, by the way. He ordered one. He hasn't received it yet. And, of course, you've had one for the last couple of weeks. What are your impressions? What do you think?
It is gorgeous. See, now I'm just going to sound like a company person, though. It's not a real...
No, it's okay. We'll give you a pass. You don't work for the Android team. Come on.
Yeah.
It's
don't
okay.
Work for the Android team. No, I love the screen. So far, it's zippity fast. So far, the battery life has been really good to me. I'm still kind of delving in. I've been using a Razer M for, I don't know, the last 4 months. And I've been... Or 3 months since I since I left, and I've been kind of like casually really loving this phone, except for the camera. This yeah. is a better camera on this phone, and I don't have the Wi-Fi charging dock yet, but I'm thinking about getting that. I just, first comes first, have the phone. But it's a really good size, actually, on my hand, and really fluid and all kinds of other stuff I can't tell you, but it's good. So.
I'm intrigued. No, really, I'm intrigued.
Is there like a glowing green orb in the Android area of campus where you can go and just get like nightly builds of Android just beamed to your handset because you work at yeah. Google now?
You don't the answer even is have yes. to be on campus for that.
No, they
sign up and say, hey, I want to beta test.
No, they actually have a Google time machine that they allow anyone to step into, go into the future, install whatever apps they've created in that time, and then come back. So it's very...
And then take the space elevator to the moon
yes.
and like show off their phones up there. Yeah. Like Eileen, you have all the goods and you can't share them.
I can't talk about anything. You know? I mean, it's like, oh yeah, I work for YouTube, but man,
still,
you get to know a lot of different things about
yeah.
the entire company as a whole. So there's
I'm sure.
many things I can't really talk about, but it's all good. It's fun. And I'm still using Android. See?
Good, Eileen? Good.
Double awesome. Android. I've got my personal Android phone, my company Android phone. I'm rocking.
Awesome.
I tried to get a Pixel, but I don't know if they're going to let me have one. So we'll see.
Oh, a Pixel. Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah, well, I want to try one out, but I don't know. I think there's a long waiting list for that. So
you'll be able to use Tom's. Because he bought one.
There's
right?
only so many $1,400 devices they're throwing around.
I should just go to. I'm actually headed up to the Bay Area this week to YouTube headquarters. I should make a trek down to Mountain View. It's like, you got any extra Pixels laying around? You know.
And they're like, oh yeah, over that corner, we just got a pile. Here, just take one. Just yeah,
take
one. Just take
a desk over there with one. You can grab it out from under the leg.
Eileen, really important question from the chat room. Sparkling Cyanide wants to know, what are you having for dinner?
Meatballs.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right, good.
Eileen, every week I try to crush, kill, destroy in the Android arena in your name. I'm trying to like carry the torch here, so I'm yes. I hope I make you proud. But I just wanted to thank you for you and Jason starting the show way back when. I'm having a blast doing it, and we miss you.
Yeah, we miss
Aww.
You.
So, are you winning, Gina? Really importantly, are you winning in the tally? Do we know?
I either win by a lot or lose by a lot. Like, I was like, right? Would you say, Jay?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. You came out of the gate rocking, though.
I came out of the gate really strong. Yeah. I was like, I'm ready to compete. So I'm working on it. I do okay. I do okay.
Okay. All right.
You're doing a great job.
I'm keeping my eye on that, Gina.
All right.
Wait a minute.
Gotta make you proud.
Eileen, you're feeding Gina apps to review in the arena. I get it now, aren't you?
Yeah, just feel free to beam me any special Google employee-only apps, you know, on the sly, and I'll be happy to release those on the show.
It might be very boring for you, but meh, maybe not. I just feel like I can't say anything.
Yeah, totally.
But no, it's been great, and the new gig is fun, and I'm working all the time, doing lots of different things. So I'm not necessarily kind of in the tech world so much anymore. Although I'm trying to keep my, hand on the pulse as much as possible. But it's kind of more entertainment stuff. Shot a music video over the weekend, and
that's exciting. That's really cool.
Shooting a game show in a couple weeks, and lots of fun stuff. So stuff that you'll see eventually roll out to everyone.
Do you do any sort of updating like on your site or whatever? So, you've worked all this time on things you can't talk about on YouTube and then suddenly they go live. Do you ever kind of put that on your site and be like, hey, I was doing this, a couple of months ago?
I probably should. There's been a lot of stuff that just hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
So once it starts rolling out, then I can actually like talk about like, oh, I helped this person out or I helped this person out and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to start like doing that. It's just, it's all probably going to come out in the next like month or two or whatever. So,
totally.
But yeah, lots of different things.
Awesome.
Just check out that site called YouTube, I think the kids like it these days. So
that's what I've heard. Yeah. It's kind of a popular site.
It's up and coming. I think it's really going to explode one of these days.
I really hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. They have like
the Harlem milkshakes or something like that. I don't know. The kids know all about it.
Kids
you can
know
find
all.
That thrift shop video on there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Eileen, thank you so much for dropping in. It's awesome to hear your voice on the show again and see you.
Good to see everyone. Hi, Kevin.
Great to see you, Eileen.
Hi, Eileen. Bye-bye.
Bye. Great bye. To see you. Take congrats. Care in L.A. Get thanks. Nice and tan.
I will.
All right. We got a cruise. How about Gina? How about you take this email and I'll take a look at the rest of stuff and see what we can get rid of.
All right, cool.
I don't think we're going to have the time for everything.
We got an email from Tiki Bigham. Tiki writes, I want to thank you for the AAA show notes. I'm a two-day-old user with my first smartphone, the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, and it's been really helpful to look through the show notes. Thanks, Tiki. Tiki asks, how long does it take to stop worrying about how fragile the smartphone is? It feels like holding a new baby. It feels so fragile. Every time I pick it up, I'm worried about seeing a crack in the screen, and since I paid up front for the device at Ting, I'm vested big time. I even have it in an OtterBox. It's really cool, though, and I'm amazed at how many free apps there are on the Play Store. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much, Tiki. So, okay, this is my take on it when it comes to smartphones. This is the thing, right? Your phone is supposed to take care of you, right? You shouldn't have to worry too much about taking care of your phone. I know the phone feels really fragile, and I know when you first buy it, especially, it's super shiny, and I know that first scratch on the screen or the first time that you drop it and the edge gets a little ragged, it's heartbreaking, totally heartbreaking. I've experienced that. But I kind of started out as somebody who would buy, like, the case for every single phone I had, and even though it made it kind of bigger and bulkier and I didn't get to sort of enjoy the form factor of the phone. And then I was just like, you know what? This is crazy. This phone is something that that I'm using. It's supposed to serve me. I don't want to have to worry about it. It's not a new baby. It actually is not that at all. It's just a gadget. It's totally replaceable. The fact is that it's there to help you out in your life. So I would say if you've got it in the OtterBox already, just kind of get comfortable with the idea that you're probably going to drop it. You might scratch it. You will scratch it at some point. That's just what it means when you use a device. And that's a good thing. That means that you love your phone and you're using it. So I think it takes some time, especially I'd say the first couple of weeks you have a new phone. You're probably a little more wary of how you use it. But I would just get real comfortable with it. Your gadgets are for you, right? You're not around to take care of your gadgets. Your gadgets are around to take care of you. Welcome to the Android world and good luck with your Galaxy Nexus. It's a great phone. I'm glad you're enjoying it, and I'm glad that you're enjoying the show notes as well.
Absolutely. And totally true. I mean, the first time I ever got, you know, a device, you know, you spend a lot of money on these things, a couple hundred dollars if you're getting it subsidized, more than that if you're not, and it's hard to just like let it go and just be like, you know what, what's gonna happen is gonna happen. You can do things, you know, like you said, like put a bumper on it or a case or mm-hmm. whatever if you're really worried about it. But it's going to happen. So just live with it and enjoy it while you have it.
Exactly. I dropped my Galaxy Nexus the other day and the edge on the gravel, and the edge is now not as smooth as it was before. And it was heartbreak. It was like, you know, I was with my daughter and I didn't drop my daughter. I dropped the phone. And that's, you know, there's a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's all about perspective.
And when you're 72, you won't remember that.
Exactly. That is true.
Very, very good point. All right. So I think I've nailed it down a little bit. We've got one story in the app segment, so let's jump in. And by the way, big thanks to Chad, who is like working overtime right now trying to keep this show afloat. It's been one thing after another, so thank you for doing such an awesome job, Chad. Just real quick here before we get to the arena, and this is kind of marginally Android news but still very cool, and I'm happy to see kind of more hints about this. The Chrome browser, a little analysis of the code of the newest version, is hinting at Google Now integration into Chrome. So we, you know, this is kind of furthering kind of what we know, you know, about Google and how serious they're taking the Now initiative, if you want to call it that, and how it's kind of reaching its tentacles into Google Glass, from what we've heard, now into Chrome. It really seems like Google is, if this is true, taking Now and just kind of banking a lot on this. What do you guys think of this?
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely Google moving toward, just-in-time notifications, and they want it to happen wherever you are, whether you're looking through Glass, whether you're looking at your phone, or if you're in Chrome, right? This is just like this is this is where they're going, right? I mean, Google is moving as a company from you asking them questions or searching and then giving you information to you never having to ask. And this is what this is all about. I love this. I love when people spot these kind of code commits into the Chromium project, which is the open source project behind Chrome. You know, it's not guaranteed that this stuff is going to actually go into the final sort of Google Chrome project, but this will, because it is Google now. And I'm interested to see how this will manifest itself kind of in Chrome. I think there's a lot that can be done with really good desktop notifications or Chrome-based notifications. And I love Now. I love Now on my phone. I want more cards. I want more notifications, which I generally don't want more noise in my life. So that's how much I kind of like it. But I like that they're judicious about only showing you stuff that you really care about. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for this.
I like that it's almost like a full circle iGoogle. Like, now it's back to, like, you know, a home page or like a new tab page that gives you, you know, everything you need to know about what you care about, just not in that old style, you know, Yahoo way, but in the new totally. Google Now way. It's kind of neat.
Totally. And it's nice to see, just from a presentation standpoint, you know, Google's really kind of refined and honed in how visually they present this information, and it's actually very appealing and very pleasing. We could have been getting this information 2 years ago, and it would have looked, you know, a lot different, and we may have not been as receptive to it because of various distractions. It seems like now they've kind of got a language going.
Obviously the card swiping left and right, they'll have to come up with a new paradigm for that, but it should be really interesting to see.
Or will they with the Pixel touchscreen?
Yeah. Maybe. You give it a swipe that way. There's definitely some design unity here, right? Like these cards, the Google Now cards have the dot, 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 which kind of expands more information, which is something that we see, that, you know, the stack of dots, which is something that we see in Holo and on Android as well. So I kind of like that unification across products, which is something that, you know, Sergey Brin has been kind of after, you know, since he took the helm at Google.
Absolutely. All right. Without further ado, let's get to one of everybody's, I think, favorite segments of the show, the Android Arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Boom. All right. So last week, real quick, let's take a look at this favorite app from episode 99. It looks like XKCD Simple Comic Viewer wins first place at 43%.
Oh, Gina.
Kind of saw that one coming. Everybody.
Make it Eileen proud, although I didn't win by a lot there. better battery stats.
The stretch narrowed a little bit from earlier today. It definitely narrowed a little bit. You were a bit further ahead this morning. Better battery stats came in second at 42%. Tapestry third at 15%. That means I'm the sore loser from last week of the folks that are on the show. Maybe not a sore loser, but I am the loser. And I'm okay with that. So hopefully I won't be next week with this week's app. And I was scratching my head, kind of trying to figure out what to talk about on the show this week. And I wasn't coming up with anything. And then I realized one of the apps that I use very regularly lately, in fact, for my Reddit use, which seems to be increasing. I'm more and more every day. I'm loving Reddit. It makes me laugh. Is Bacon Reader. For Reddit. It's developed by One Louder Apps, and they do a lot of apps that you've probably heard of, Friendcaster, Tweetcaster. They've got a really nice design approach to their apps. So I'll just go ahead and show you really quick. You know, Reddit apps are kind of like Twitter apps. There's a million of them, and all you need to do is find one that kind of speaks to you. Bacon Reader, I've moved away from it, and I keep coming back to it, and they keep refining it and making it better and better with every revision, and I'm just really loving it these days. And so you'll have to excuse the fact that there might be bad language in here because, well, it's Reddit. Saw something at the very top there. But basically, you have your list here. This is my front page, and if I pull this drop down, I get all of the Reddits that I subscribe to. Lately, I've been really enjoying We Are the Music Makers, but there's also a fantastic Android Reddit at android.reddit.com. I'll probably go to there, and basically it'll pull up all the, you know, you can log into your Reddit account, and it will pull up anything that you're subscribed to through Reddit. You have your ability to, you know, make the changes as far as what you're seeing through what's hot right now, what's, you know, the top or rising, what's newly posted, all of that kind of stuff is accessible through there. Let me just get it to refresh here, because of course it's taking forever. If you see something that has a little image on the side here, you can just tap the image and it'll load that up immediately or take you through to the site that it's linked to. And, you know, you have the ability of using the browser that's inside of Bacon Reader or having it jump out to any browser of your choice. And I've actually really liked the browser within Bacon Reader, so I rarely seem to switch it away, but it's possible if you need to. This is St. Patrick's Day through glass. I wonder what that is. So you can tap on there to take you to whatever it is. That in that case, it's a YouTube video, so I won't play that because I don't know what I'm in store for. Or you can wait for my slow freaking phone. Come on. Sorry, folks. Apparently, I don't want to go to Chrome Beta right now because it's crashing on me.
Oh.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so if we went through, if I just clicked on the overall subject heading, it would take me to the actual kind of comments. And from there, you can, you know, do all the things that you would expect to be able to do through Reddit. You can post a reply, go directly to through to the link. You can share the link or the, you know, a link to the actual comments page as well. And yeah, I mean, you know, with these, oh, you can also upvote and downvote up at the very top there. Sure, I'll go ahead and do that. I have no idea what I upvoted there, but I'm sure it's great. Overall, it's just kind of a no-frills, but I think reasonably designed app compared to a lot of the other ones that I've used that, I don't know, for one reason or another, I just didn't enjoy using them. I keep coming back to this, Bacon Reader, and it's just called Bacon Reader for Reddit. There's a free version that's pretty much fully accessible to all the features. You have persistent ads down at the bottom, or you can pay $1.99 and get the full version. There's also a full screen mode here, which I just jumped into. But if you are a fan of maneuvering through the different Reddits like funny, which I was doing the other night and came across some really ridiculous stuff as per usual. You'll always find ridiculous stuff in funny. Check it out. It's just a great Reddit reader for Android. Bacon Reader for Reddit. And free or $1.99. And that is my app. I love it. So who is next here? Let's see here. We have Kevin. You're going to talk about something that I'm actually very stoked about. just because we haven't really had this on the show much other than conversation. So to be able to talk with someone who's actually used this app, I'm very curious to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so mine is pretty simple, but also kind of like category changing in some ways. I have a Pebble watch to play around with. You guys have talked about it on the show before. If you don't remember, it was a Kickstarter project that got $10 million in funding and way more kind of buyers in than they thought they were going to get. So it was a little bit delayed, and by a little, I mean a lot. And finally, it just started arriving out to folks in mid-February. And now Pebble is a smartwatch that picks up notifications from your phone. Notifications and GPS signals and all kinds of stuff that's supposed to give you information on your wrist as opposed to on your phone. So you don't have to pull out your phone and check it and keep aware of it all the time. I like it. It's a pretty well-designed piece, hardware-wise and whatnot. But when you first open it and check out the settings, you've got, okay, good, Google Voice, Gmail, text messages, Facebook and Twitter, and I think some Google Talk and some calendar. And you're like, okay, that's it, though. The settings just kind of have what you call the standard stack of notifications available to you. And, you know, a lot of people use different messaging apps. A lot of people use an alternate Twitter client, like Gina and myself, for instance, are fans of Carbon. So if you use anything other than kind of the core apps, you're like, well, you know, I want those notifications on my Pebble. And it seems like it's gonna be a long time before the Pebble team gets around to developing those. Enter third-party developers. As they always do in the Android market, they often save the day. There's just this app called Pebble Notifier. And it was so dumb in some ways because you just go to the Google Play Store, you're like, type in Pebble Notifications, and you're like, and the result is, oh, here's an app that lets you enable literally everything on your phone for Pebble. And you're like, wait, hold on. So, oh, okay.
I can't believe this is out already. Solved.
Well, I mean, it must be a really good API because this app literally, it gives you a list of all your apps and you check the ones that you want to get notifications from. And I tested it with Kick Messenger. I have a rain detecting app. It's very nerdy. It makes me feel like a digital farmer, but it tells you like how far away rain is and how intense it is. And I get that now. And You can have Tasker send Pebble notifications if you want to get three levels into the crazy Android nerdness. so you can automate it so that your watch gets notifications when your battery is at a certain level, like I do now. I'm at a disadvantage because all I can say is Pebble Notifier literally fixes and improves the watch 100%. So Pebble Notifier, it's a free app in the Google Play Store, and it totally opens up this very neat watch to a lot of possibilities.
Very cool. Has the Pebble shipped to everyone? I don't have one. Someone asked, just asked them in the chat room.
No, they're doing like 6,000, 10,000 a week, and they've got a long line to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically... back to front. Whoever was the first Kickstarter got theirs first, and moving forward.
Sweet. And you wrote a piece in IT World, which I dropped in the chat room as well. So you're liking it? It thumbs up with the Pebble, thumbs down.
Especially thumbs up. Noting that it's $150 retail, and you got to want to, you would have to want to really get these notifications on your wrist all the time, and want to control it. But especially with Pebble Notifier and the customizations, it's quite a neat tool to be trying out. I'm only 3 days into it, though. I need a little bit more time.
Cool.
So that's all I got. Really cool app, and third party developers to the rescue.
Awesome. Love the developers for filling the gaps.
And so quickly. I love that they released that so quickly, like faster than Pebble did. Pebble did officially.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Awesome. And then Gina, you have a cool social app. I think Chad and I are like scrambling to try and get it connected between the two of us because we're the two in the studio right now. So I know I've got it installed. So hopefully we'll get this connected between the two of us while you talk about this.
All right, cool.
I got
cool.
you covered, so Gina.
All right, you got it?
Yeah. Excellent. So Jason, actually what I need you to do is get off the Wi-Fi network.
Oh, I need to get off?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, Gina.
So the name of my app is InstaBridge, and it solves the problem of when you have friends or family or babysitters or whoever come over to your house and they ask you for your Wi-Fi password. And you write it down on a piece of paper because you've got a long and complicated password, maybe, or you just want someone to be able to easily enter it into their phone. That's just not the easiest way to share a password. I gave my password to my sitter. She put it on her iPhone, then came back with an iPad and said, oh, can you give that to me again? And it's just a pain. It's just a pain to tell people, hey, this is my Wi-Fi password. Feel free to use it. This is the problem that InstaBridge is trying to solve. InstaBridge is a free app. And what it does essentially is let you share your Wi-Fi hotspot credentials with your friends. So it's social Wi-Fi login, username, password sharing. So you install InstaBridge on your Android phone or your tablet, and you add your friends either from Facebook or from your address book. And if you have a Wi-Fi hotspot that you want to share, maybe it's your home Wi-Fi hotspot, maybe it's a coffee shop, maybe it's the public network at the Twit studio, you can share those credentials to your friends. And then they, if you give them permission, can share those credentials with their friends. So you get this kind of like friends and friends of friends network of Wi-Fi hotspots that are shared between people who know one another, so that you can use one another's Wi-Fi passwords. I actually have been using this app for a couple of days. I'm not even using really the social part of it because this really works. This works really well if you live in a really dense area where you have a bunch of friends who live nearby or work kind of in a similar place. But what InstaBridge also does is shares Wi-Fi logins amongst your devices, right? So if your spouse has an Android phone or an Android tablet, and you've got an Android phone or an Android tablet, and you kind of discover new hotspots and credentials as you go, it's worth having InstaBridge installed so that you can just propagate those usernames and passwords across those devices without having to manually enter or write it down on a piece of paper and share it. So I think Jason and Chad both installed InstaBridge, and were you guys able to share credentials with one another in it?
So here's the deal. I ended up getting a text message from Chad saying that he shared, he's sharing his Wi-Fi with me. When I followed the link, it actually just took me to a browser and said, install the app, which I already have the app installed.
So you haven't gotten a message through InstaBridge yet? That
I see. So
it should be kind of a push. It should be a push notification through InstaBridge.
Yeah, and I didn't get that.
And the other thing is I could connect via Facebook, but I have like crazy Facebook security turned on.
Yeah.
So I haven't been able to actually log into Facebook yet, which probably would be the much more seamless integration to actually find friends.
Right.
Which is my fault.
Yeah, no, that's totally fine. You know, it's one of those things where, like, you hear about this and you're like, that sounds kind of insecure. And why would you have a password at all if you wanted to share it? I mean, everyone knows you do want to have a Wi-Fi password set so that you can, so that your transmissions, you know, that someone else can't listen in that you don't want listening in. But at the same time, we all kind of want to share the internet love. And this is one way to do it. And if you go to the InstaBridge website, instabridge.com, it explains that they, you know, kind of use encryption and SSL to store your credentials. And you can revoke access to a network at any point very easily just within the app, you know, if someone doesn't, you know, come to your house anymore or whatever. You can say, don't share with friends of friends. You can connect to Facebook, like Chad said, or you can just bring in your address book and then text someone and say, hey, yeah, I've shared my credentials with you. I think I got it.
I think so. Yeah, I had to do a verification, which I hadn't done launching.
Right.
It verifies
your phone number. Yeah.
Then Chad came up. Now I'm getting a little notification up here. This is Wi-Fi available. I can request access to Chad's. Let's see here. There might be numbers that people shouldn't see
here. I don't have any friends yet. I have zero friends.
Oh, you have zero.
Zero is the loneliest number.
It's funny that this, like, the whole idea of, like, sharing Wi-Fi and everything, it was actually a plot point in Cory Doctorow's Someone Comes to Town, Someone Leaves Town. And now this app is actually just creating that, like, kind of like, hey, everybody, let's share Wi-Fi and defeat the government.
Yeah.
But without that part.
And so, Gina, just to make sure that we have, you know, it's not. I'm not creating a Wi-Fi hotspot on my phone. I'm just sharing the password. So I'm just right, to my friends. Right. So then you'll be able to connect to the network that you didn't have before. It's not like a ad hoc network.
Right. Sorry, I should have been clear about that. Yeah, you're actually sharing the credentials for a particular hotspot that already exists, right? So InstaBridge will show you a map of where you live, and you'll see a little, you know, pointers, pins with your friends. It'll say, you know, Chad is sharing, you know, above the Twit studio, Chad is sharing, you know, Wi-Fi with you here. So that as you travel, you can say, hey, do any of my friends have a hotspot near here? You know, do they know about that I could use? So, if you and a bunch of friends go to a coffee shop, and you know, sometimes they're stingy about handing out the password to only the one person who buys something, you could really easily kind of just enter the password, share it with your friends, and then they would get it. So you're not actually creating an ad hoc network. You're sharing the login for an existing hotspot.
Without that person that you're sharing it with ever knowing what the password actually was.
That's right. I don't know. You might be able to tap on it and actually see. You might be able to see the password.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it's basically the point is to replace sharing your password by writing it down on a piece of paper and handing it to somebody when they come to your house or, you know, go to a thing.
Totally. Awesome.
Especially that this demo is so complicated.
Yeah.
No. Well, it's like I thought I was going to be super secure. I don't do this anymore, but like my Wi-Fi password used to be it used to be a funny XKCD comic, correct horse battery staple, you know, correct horse battery staple. That was way too long for me to tell someone.
Totally.
And it was way too long to write down. And so this would be, you know, nice to just be like, just download this app, find me on Facebook, and here, now you have it, which would have been much more easy.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Right.
Like that. Cool.
InstaBridge, that is free.
Excellent. Free InstaBridge Wi-Fi client. You can search for that. So that is it for the Arena Bacon Reader, Pebble Notifier, and InstaBridge. You can vote for your favorite app this week by going to AAApoll.com/100 for 100, AAApoll.com/100, and let us know which of these three apps is your favorite app of the week. And early reports, bacon coming out ahead, but that could just be because people like bacon. So we'll see what happens.
And Reddit,
yes. InstaBridge coming up second. We'll see what happens on this, and we'll check in next week to find out. Next week, speaking of next week, Tim Schofield, QB King. We've had him once on the show, I think about a year ago. He does a lot of really cool kind of Android how-to
walkthroughs and everything on YouTube, and he's very active creating a lot of different shows right now. So we're going to have him back on the show next week. Very excited for that. But as for this week, I think that's it. I think we're done. We made it alive.
Woo! We did. It was epic.
It was.
An epic parade of awesomeness on the show.
Yes, and thank you again, Chad, for juggling all of that.
No problem.
Thanks, Chad.
I'm sure you had a bead of sweat dripping down your forehead at one point.
At one point.
Single bead.
Kevin Purdy, always a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence on episode 100. Pretty cool show to be on. Why don't you share with everybody whatever you want them to know, what you're up to, where they can find you.
Okay. I tweet at Kevin Purdy. I'm on Google Pluses, just Kevin Purdy. I'm writing for IT World quite often these days, including the piece I just wrote about the Pebble and my impression after 3 days with it. Working forever to update the complete Android guide, hoping they don't announce a new version at Google I.O. And I'm one of the few. And that's about it, I guess, for now. Oh, and I have a show with Gina that I do every week on Wednesday on a different network called In Beta.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a great show. You guys actually had a pretty cool guest. Was it 2 weeks ago you had the developer?
Yeah, we had the Carbon developer. Carbon. Yeah. Sala Smiley, who develops Carbon, talked to us a little bit about his design process there.
Over Skype from Dubai.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was a great interview. I was actually listening live while you guys were doing that. I was in the chat room.
Oh, sweet. Awesome.
And Gina, what you up to these days?
I am hosting This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that's on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific. And I do a show, like Kevin said, with Kevin called In Beta. That's at 5by5.tv/InBeta. And the rest of the time, I work on an app called ThinkUp. It's a social network insights platform. It's totally free. You should check it out at thinkup.com. We're actually working on our 2.0 beta. So if you're a willing and able beta tester, check it out. You can download it at thinkup.com.
Excellent. And Chad, go.
My name is Chad, and you can find me on the Twit Network. I produce a whole bunch of shows, and I do my own show about Minecraft at omgcraft.com. We'll be coming to the Twit Network soon in April.
Coming soon.
With a
20-minute every episode feature on Minecraft Pocket Edition for Android, right?
Only Ron will be there during every episode talking about Minecraft.
He'll be a field reporter
right,
for that.
Exactly.
Cool. Look forward to that. You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell or follow my music travails, whatever you want to call them, at yellowgoldmusic.com. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for sticking with us for 100 episodes. We hope to give you at least 100 more. We'll see how that goes. Voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. Leave us a voicemail. Love hearing your voices, and I promise we're going to play some of those next week. Email and video mail at aaa@twit.tv. Twitter, we are on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Show notes can be found at twit.tv/AAA, along with past episodes there, iTunes, YouTube, all over the place. Finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
This is Martin Brown from London, England, saying to All About Android, congratulations for your 100th edition, and I love the show.